Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is The Widow's Club with Alexandra Wyman.
Hello, so good to be back with all of you this week. I hope that 2024 is treating you well and that it is, I don't know, it seems to be a mix, I'll say, from what I'm hearing, although it seems like it's definitely a year. I like to call this year my year of healing. Last year was definitely a year of tests, and so it seems to be a little quieter as far as the tests. Not for everybody. Some people have said this year has started a little rough, but I'll say for us in our house, there are things that have happened. We had a 3-week period where I was starting a new job, having some construction done on the house, and then Buddy got sick. So it was all, I had it all planned out really nicely, and that did not work out in the way that I planned it. And again, just another opportunity to practice flexibility and going with the flow, which is not really a natural thing for me. But otherwise, I'd say I'm doing well. And I just can't believe already how fast this year is flying by. I usually say that the days can go really slow, but the weeks go fast. But I had a whole different plan for you all today. And then I got a ping for something else that I wanted to share. So we're going to go in that direction. And just some interesting things in our lives with all of that going on. So Buddy is 4.5. Make sure to tell everybody about that half. And he recently started reading. And this is not like a mom brag moment. It's more of a, oh my goodness, I feel like I'm a little bit over my head because I don't know how to teach reading. I don't know how to help him with that. But he started sounding out words. And I am proud of him for that and also a little scared because I'm like, oh, where do we go from here? You are not in kindergarten yet and I'm not a teacher. So on that note, if any of you are teachers or do primary education, please reach out and give me some tips and tricks. Right now we're using Bob books and those have worked out pretty well. So always fun to see the growth that he has. And it does make me sad with any milestone he hits or things that he shows interest in that I know Sean would have loved. It always, there's just a little bit of sadness that comes with it. So it's always, they all come together, like the joy and sadness now just kind of come together. There's always going to be a slight hint of that sadness, definitely more joy. I'd say like 95% joy when I see him do something that's really cool or he says something or the way he giggles or laughs, or he actually cracked himself up the other day and that made me laugh even harder. So there's always, you know, 95% joy on my part and then that 5% sadness. Like, oh man, your dad would have loved this. But today I want to jump into this idea where there's so many people out there who have different systems, different ways of healing, different ideas, right? So I feel that when someone, including myself, I am definitely in this category, you find a system that works and you go, oh my gosh, this was life changing. I need to share this. I need to get out there and let people know. So there are so many different things to choose from. And then we have a percentage of people who end up in that kind of guru category, right? They consider themselves to be the ultimate resource, the person who knows how to achieve whatever that is. And I'll be honest, I'm very skeptical when it comes to gurus. When I share strategy with all of you, it's because I'm using them. I am by no means a guru. I have not made it to any endpoint. There is no endpoint because this is continued growth. As soon as you peel back a layer of your personal onion, another one is going to show. I don't know how many times I've been like, gosh, this is exhausting. Could I just stop? Could we just have a break from all this self-discovery? Because it's exhausting. I'll say from my experience, as soon as I've healed a limiting core belief, or as soon as I've had an aha and found a pattern that I need to adjust or break, another one just emerges and I go, oh gosh, there's more work to be done. There's a point in getting to just going with the flow with it rather than feeling like, where is that endpoint? I'm a very goal-oriented person, so I work really well with to-do lists, and this is a project I have to work, and this is my deadline. I do very well with that. And personal growth takes that and crumples it up and rips it up into shreds and eats it and spits it out and puts it in the trash, because that's just not how it works. And as our soul is continuing to grow and find that healing and purity and authenticity, it's a continued process. We have a lot to work through. So when I hear about someone who's a guru or someone who's considered the ultimate or says, I don't need a coach, or I've listened to several podcasts of individuals who are considered to be very unhealthy and cultish, and they have a following. And I've also listened to other people who are considered to be healthy, or I should say healthier, who might talk about, like, I found it, I figured it out. And both of those I would consider honestly to be on the unhealthier, because we all have a coach. Everybody does. Because there's no way that I could find a process that worked for me if I didn't read or study other things that someone else has already written. And right there is a coach. And it doesn't matter what downloads. And when I say downloads, I mean those pings, those messages I feel like I'm getting from my team. And this is not a physical team. This is my spiritual team. So even when I was writing, and truly I do follow the premise of my writing and of my book, for those of you who haven't read it or checked it out, and that's totally fine. The ultimate is to get to love, compassion, forgiveness. How do you practice love, compassion, and forgiveness on a daily basis, not just for those people you choose to love, be compassionate with, and forgive, for everybody, for the Hitlers, for the Mussolinis, for people who wrong you on a daily basis, for that coworker who took a promotion from you or said that your work was theirs, for a spouse that has not been kind, for anybody that you feel has negatively impacted you? How do you get to a point of love, compassion, and forgiveness? Now, let me tell you, that might be my ultimate, but this is why we have processes. This is why there are all these people who are searching for ways to heal, because that is a really tall order. It's really hard. I just think of all the little micro moments throughout a day. I recently was in this new job that I have, and I'm covering for someone, and this person is beloved. Like, I even adore this person, and they had to take a leave from work. So I just went back to my old job, honestly, from a couple years ago. But the teams I'm working with now are doing this, like, who are you? Like, they want my help and my sort of my expertise. They want my help in occupational therapy. That's my day job. But they're also like, who do you think you are coming into our school right now in the middle of the year? And so I recognized, which was actually a big moment for me, because I can very easily be like, well, I'm an expert in what I do, and you need to listen to what I'm saying and what I'm suggesting, because I am really good at what I do and I know what is best, right? Do you hear a lot of ego in there? I'm going to get some more ego. Lots of ego in there. And so over the last couple of years, I've really been working on, you know, quieting that ego, right? We've got two different egos. And again, I'll get to that in a moment. But I realized, like, this team in particular, I mean, they were kind of going after me a little bit. And I'm like, this is day one of meeting you all. And I realized that it wasn't about me, which I've shared with you all about it, the what about me, and it's not always about you. But they are just hurting. They've had so much change. They haven't had much stability in their year. And then you have someone who they adore who just kind of disappears, because basically this person who's left is like, I'm leaving and I don't want anyone to know why. And that's their business. That is absolutely their business. And so these people have no information. And then I'm coming in being like, hey, I've got to make a schedule. I've got to see some students. I've got to find a place to sit. And they're like, ooh, they're a little territorial. My point in that is I had to take a moment, because initially I became very defensive and wanted to kind of bark back at them and be like, do you want me to see your kids or not? Right? Not very helpful. Not very helpful. So I had to calm myself and go back in. And honestly, what I do with tough situations like that is I always bring muffins or sustenance. I'm like, if we have to meet, it's always better if you have cookies on the table. So that's what I did. I brought muffins and was able to work it out with that team. So all of that to say is that even on a daily basis, it can be difficult to try and come from a compassionate perspective, to try and find that level of love that you can provide to someone and recognize that they're also going through something. These people don't know anything about me. They don't know anything about my own tragedy, my own trauma. They could care less, right? What they have in front of them and their survival is what's going on. So forgiveness, compassion, and love. And I am certainly not a guru on that. I don't know. I am tripping through and stumbling through this thing called life with all of you, is my point. And so I just send a note of caution. If you hear of someone who claims that they're the ultimate resource, if you hear someone who claims that you know, all our messages are from divine. I feel that I've gotten messages from divine. Hopefully I don't lose any of you as listeners, but I do feel that I've gotten messages from divine and been able to incorporate that. But I do not consider myself to be an ultimate resource for all of you. I am just another tool. The things I share are just another tool, and I follow them because there's no point in me saying, hey, do this if I'm not going to do it first. That was my management style too. Like, I'm not going to tell you how to do something and then go over here and do something different. That makes no sense. So I'm trying, like, as I'm saying that, like, have I done that? I'm sure I have, but like now and where I am in my life, I wouldn't do that. The whole point of what I'm trying to share is, how do we heal the past so we can heal our present? How do we gain insight to patterns, messages, projections we've gotten in our past that impact us as adults? And how do we start undoing those layers? You know, that onion, the onion of life, the onion of self. How do we undo those layers so that we can figure out where's our authenticity? You might already have nailed it. And again, if you've already nailed this and you're like, oh, I'm in my authenticity so often, awesome. Please reach out. Tell me how you've done it. Because I'm also always looking for more resources, people to follow or read. You know, I have been reading more, but just to see, like, maybe there's something that someone else is doing that might work for me as well. And then I can share with all of you. So recently, I myself have been working through certain patterns. One of the biggest ones that has come up more recently has been understanding that as a child, I felt, now again, this is all about my interpretation of how I felt things were happening around me, not necessarily how they actually were, right? So my parents' perspective on how things were is going to be different than mine. This is how I internalized things as a child and then set up kind of how I view myself, my world around me, and how I do things. So I felt as a child that a lot of my worth was tied into what I was doing, not who I was. So there was like an unspoken expectation to get good grades, but it was also like, try your hardest. Like, they felt that our hardest should have been A's. And so it was, do your best. And at least for me, if they felt that I could have done better, they'd let me know. And also, being the daughter of a priest, right? There are people around, and I'm sure if any of you have been around pastors' kids, pastors' families, priest kids, priest families, we all have this unity among how we're treated and how we're viewed by parishioners at a church. But it would be the same thing, how I was dressed. Like, I was considered good. I'm doing quotes, you guys can't see, I'm doing quotes. I was considered good if I dressed a certain way that other people agreed was appropriate. If I participated in the church enough, and I'll tell you, I am in my 40s now, and this still comes up every once in a while because I do sometimes attend the church where my dad is still a priest. And in my 40s, there are still people who will pay attention to how participatory I am or not. I'm like, I'm an adult. I left that a long time ago. So there was this pattern of what I was doing, how I was acting, not who I was as a person. And more recently, this pattern came up a little bit more, and I was able to find it was the same thing in friendships. It was the same thing in intimate relationships. Still same with Sean, but a little different, because I do feel like he could see me for who I was, even if I couldn't. But definitely in friendships, it became about what was I offering to people that I could do for them rather than just being me. And that, wow, that's been a ground shaker for me, I will say. Because in recognizing that pattern, putting it aside and saying, okay, I need to break this. I don't want to continue this. There's more to me than what I can do for people. And it makes a very conditional environment, right? If I do something that someone else perceives they don't like, then I don't feel liked. What? Now, I know I'm not the only person who's ever experienced that. It makes it very conditional rather than feeling that people are seeing me for who I truly am and loving me or liking me or being around me for me and not what I'm doing. So my point in sharing this is that this has created a sense of self-discovery. I've already mentioned that when it comes to grief, the rules are out the window. There are so many things or systems or ideas that I bought into, conditioning that I bought into, where I'm like, none of that applies anymore. When you have to rebuild your life,
forget all that conditioning. Like, I get to make up these rules because I got handed, oof, I got handed something. And in rebuilding that life, I find that now I'm in a position, and I am almost 4 years out from Sean passing. And I'm at a point now where I'm like, oh, I'm rebuilding myself as a person. It's self-discovery in so many different ways. I am discovering who I was and how I acted and the way I was before Sean died, and understanding a little bit more of my process since. But then also, this pattern had nothing to do with Sean. This was something that came from my childhood, and with the intention to put that to rest. Now I am looking at rediscovering myself and being able to figure out, well, who am I? If people ask me who I am, it's interesting because I've watched myself do this. I'll talk about the things that I do. I don't necessarily talk about the parts of me of who I am. And then I even had to sit there and go, well, do I know? I don't know. So anyway, it's all a process. I'll keep you all posted on this self-discovery journey, because I knew after Sean died that I would need to, but I didn't understand it. I knew that I was different. I knew that something had shifted and changed. I knew I would never be the same person that I was before, but I didn't understand the magnitude of what that meant until this point when I, oh, like, not only am I trying to understand the things I enjoy doing, because my hobbies have shifted, how I relate to people has shifted, how I relate to this world has shifted, but then recognizing this pattern has pushed me to completely have to alter and understand and explore, who am I? Which, you know, maybe that's always part of that lifelong journey as well, and getting to that authenticity in being and so forth. I did want to touch on the ego thing, because I don't think I'll cover everything. I feel like I'm running out of the time that I wanted to share with you all today, but I will talk about it more in depth. There's this whole idea around the death of ego. And it's that ego, it's the materialistic side of us that comes out of fear and scarcity ego. We have ego that helps keep us safe, right? So there's kind of two versions of this. The ego that helps prompt us if a relationship or if someone we're interacting with, you know, that spidey sense that comes up, that's where I kind of see where that ego comes in. That spidey sense that's like, something feels off about this. This may not be a right place for you to go, in that deep entrenched safety and security of you as a person. The not so great ego, or the ego that people are working on with the death of the ego and deconditioning, is that one that's tied into the materialism and tied into comparison and tied into jealousy. If you see where some, you know, the grass is greener, someone is doing something that you want to, and trust me, this has been coming up for me quite a bit recently. And like I said, I do want to share more in the future about this, but that's the ego that can be harmful, that pulls us away from our authenticity. It pulls us away from being in our self-worth, because we get caught up in what other people are doing, what other people are saying. We're not staying in our lane. We're all over the road. We're in other people's lanes. We're paying attention to what other people are doing, and we're not sticking to our own process. We see someone with a nicer car, we want the nicer car. We see someone who we think we're doing a better job than them, and we're like, who do you think you are? Which I talked about earlier, right? Here I am coming into a meeting like, oh, I know my job, I know what I'm doing. And yet that was all ego, right? And that was out of my own insecurity. I'm like, I don't know this team. I don't know what I'm coming into. And so instead of just being entrenched in my worth, like, I'm just going to see and be flexible and go with it. It came out more like scarcity and fear in my unhealthy ego. So that's just a tidbit to think about. Talking about kind of that self-discovery, I think, is enough for all of you this week. But I will come back to the idea of the death of the ego and the healing and all of that. But anyway, I hope you all have a wonderful week. Thank you for letting me share with you. It's just always a pleasure. And again, I'm just hooking arms with you. I'm right on this journey with you, and I appreciate all that you do.
Thanks for listening. For more about Alexandra and her work, go to forwardtojoy.com.
Hi, this is Candace Sampson, the voice behind What She Said. My show is your destination for stories that not only entertain, but also educate and empower. Every week, I spotlight strong female voices from across Canada, women who are changing the narrative and driving change. Don't miss out on these inspiring episodes. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music, or head over to whatshesaidtalk.com.
What She Said can also be heard on blasttheradio.com, Mondays at 5 p.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. That's blasttheradio.com.
It's time to dive into the stories that truly matter.
Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.